Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, the playmakers are back on the stage. Hmm. And this one is this play is Frozen is going to be a tough one. We're going to be getting to know intimately a killer, a stalker, a abductor of small children. And then we're going to get to know the mother of one of the victims. And then we're also going to know a psychiatrist who thinks she can put some understanding to all of this. And all of these people are going to meet each other, and it is going to be traumatic. And I've wondered about how all of this is going to work out. So I've asked Drew Barr, who is the director of the Playmakers' latest production, Frozen, to come explain everything to me.
Or try.
Drew, welcome. Before we got on the air, I was telling you how much I loved the last play you did for the Playmakers, Copenhagen, a really tough assignment, and you made it tremendously interesting. So I'm excited about your being back.
Well, thank you very much. And I am too.
Tell us about this play. This is a tough one, isn't it?
It is a tough one for certainly for the reasons you brought up initially, and it's thrilling because it is a traumatic situation, or a traumatic events are kind of dealt with in the play, but the way that they are approached, to my mind, is so direct and honest and thought-provoking that the experience of watching the play is uplifting and kind of releasing.
A terrible story, but uplifting in the resolution. So what I want you to do is tell us. And you won't tell us the whole story,
right.
No, but you will tell us a lot of it.
Sure.
Tell us a lot of the story.
Yeah. Now?
Yeah, right now.
Well, as you said, it concerns the disappearance of a 10-year-old girl. The play takes place in England, and a little girl, Rona, is sent by her mother on a sunny day to bring a pair of pruning shears to help to her grandmother's house. Little Red
it's
Riding
evocative
Hood.
It's evocative of Little Red Riding Hood going out and encountering the Big Bad Wolf.
Absolutely.
So the little girl goes out. Goes out and doesn't come back.
Doesn't come back. And we see it. The play is a series of many scenes that covers a period of many years. The Rona disappears in April of 1980, and we see her mother, Nancy. Over the course of 20 years, 21 years actually, first struggling horribly and painfully with her child's disappearance, it leads her to found an organization called FLAME, which is for families of missing children, and it leads to the play charts the evolution of her relationship with her husband and also her surviving child, her daughter Ingrid, who is older than Rona.
And what happens? We know that it's a strain on families. We've seen it every time a child is in a situation like this, or any other kind of really tough thing where you lose a child or a child is not able to perform up to expectations. It often tears a family. It challenges a family.
Well, one of the things that's very fascinating is that you do there are the title of the play is Frozen, and there are many literal and metaphorical meanings perhaps attached to it during the play. But one fascinating relationship that you watch is that of Nancy, the mother, and Ingrid, the daughter who was 13 when Rona was when Rona disappeared, and in many ways that relationship is frozen at that event. And throughout the play, you see Nancy over 20 years struggling with this relation with her daughter, who she doesn't understand, and she's angry with, and finally comes to, and I guess this is one of the things that's most uplifting about the play, finally she develops a relationship with her daughter Ingrid that she never would have expected. And she learns so much from this daughter who actually develops unbeknownst to her into a full person and her own person. And because Nancy, perhaps because Nancy freezes her at that moment of in time of Rona's disappearance, she is surprised ultimately by the woman that her daughter becomes. Mm.
Well, I think all of us can will bring into the play, if we're prepared for it, an empathy for this kind of situation. Not all of us have lost a child from abduction, but almost all of us have had challenges with their children that have strained the family or in contact with friends or family like this. Horrible to lose a child.
Mm.
And there are two more characters.
Yeah.
And if you talk about it however you want to, but the one that I think is a challenge is that in this play we get to know the abductor. And how do you set that up so that you can bring this abductor in and introduce him to the audience?
Well, he's an abductor. He's a convicted pedophile. And he is, he really is very unapologetic about who he is, how he thinks that perhaps sounds strange to say he's unapologetic, but the play, we meet Ralph, just after he has taken Rona. And Ralph, too, Ralph Ian Wantage is his name. We follow him over the course of the same 21 years that we follow Nancy Shirley to their ultimate meeting. We see Ralph a bit outraged at being accused of a crime that takes place in Scotland that he had nothing to do with. We see him celebrate and obsess over various tattoos that he has on his body. We get to know a lot of what makes Ralph tick.
One of the things that I think so many of us who watch or who only watch and read about these horrible crimes committed by these horrible people, and we wonder what in the world is going on in that person's mind that would make him or her be so evil.
Yeah.
Well, this play
yeah.
takes you into the mind of one of those people, and it's in one respect, I mean, it's very enlightening, but it's also horrifying to see the normalcy of a criminal mind.
Yeah.
In the sense of that
from
person,
his perception, yeah.
From his perception,
yeah.
Quite normal for me as a criminal to sort of, oh yes, I'll in abducting this small child, let me just figure out how to do this in an organized fashion.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
Well, and also one thing that it makes me think about is that it's normal, but at the same time and we'll talk about Agneta, the psychiatrist, but her work is based in the study of specifically criminals who are victims of extreme abuse in their childhood, usually, and the study of the effects of traumatic brain injury on brain development, and then ultimately on violent behavior, and one of the very provocative things about the play is that as we learn about Agneta's theories and learn about the work that she does,
let me just interrupt you because we're into this Agneta is the third character in the play whom we'll get to know, and she is a psychiatrist. I don't know how am I going to describe this without getting kicked off the air. I can't find the words, but she's a typical strong-willed very much strong, I would just say, feminist maybe.
She's a successful, very successful professional and academic, and
she knows it. And haughty might be a word to describe her. You know, you're framing the character. I shouldn't do this anyway. She knows what's going on, and she knows what's going on, sorta. And so she's a very powerful person, and she's the third character who intersects. But so now that I've characterized her, you tell me about her.
Well, I mean, she talks about she's studied over 250 cases similar to Ralph's, and. So she does know what she knows whereof she speaks. And she it's very interesting that we meet a woman whose chosen profession is to spend is to go and spend intensive periods of time with predominantly men who are on death row for violent serial killings. And it is, it definitely calls for a certain personality type. And that's one of the things that I think she struggles with in the play is the fact that she's going through a traumatic experience of her own during the course of the play. And she's grieving enormously. And she has to deal with the way in which that inner emotional experience is threatens her, the boundaries that her profession demands.
Well, that's so interesting. We don't want to give away all of the secrets of the play, but you're confronted. I think you're going to have me confronted with this woman who I will recognize as a woman who would push over me if I got in her way. And then by the end of the play, we realize that she is deeply human and struggling and grieving, and that. It adds another complexity. Well, we're Drew Barr, the director of the Playmakers' latest production, Frozen, and I are talking about this wonderful and provocative and in some sense terrible, difficult play. He and I will be right back after this short break.
Did you know that there's a new way to manage aging skin and wrinkles? This is Dr. Janelle Williams with Central Dermatology. Restylane, a product composed of hyaluronic acid, a substance naturally produced by the body, is a treatment administered to help visibly smooth facial tissue. Restylane is one way in which to preserve beauty and youth during the natural aging process. Restylane is a transparent gel that can be injected into the facial tissue, usually around the mouth and nose, to smooth wrinkles and folds. Once injected, Restylane works temporarily to add volume to facial tissue. The smoothing effect of the treatment will last approximately 6 months.
For medical or cosmetic questions about your skin, call Central Dermatology Center at 401-1994 or click on www.cdcskin.com. Central Dermatology is located on Highway 54 near the I-40 Exchange. Central Dermatology, protecting what protects you.
Hi, I'm Beth Siegler of SafeSkills. For over 25 years, SafeSkills has been the leader in self-defense training. SafeSkills is unique because we offer a broad-based approach to personal safety, which includes verbal, psychological, and physical defense skills. SafeSkills offers programs that are perfect for your next lunchtime training or staff retreat. Whether it's a self-defense program or martial arts class, your empowerment is our goal. At our training center, we also teach gentle spirit karate, which is all about personal growth. If you want to get fit and learn amazing skills, make SafeSkills part of your New Year's resolution. Our beginner's classes are known for the personal attention you'll get, and best of all, it's fun. SafeSkills is perfect for someone looking for a holistic approach to fitness and personal safety. We're on Shannon Road in Durham, just 5 minutes from Chapel Hill. Visit us on the web at safeskills.com or call today, 644-1335. That's 644-1335.
Good morning, Aubrey.
Good morning, Ron. You got a good joke for us today?
I do, and this is one of my own.
Uh-oh, I'm scared. Let's hear it then.
A horse walks into a bar, and the bartender says, "Why the long face?"
Oh, no. That was bad.
Please help Ron Stutz by sending us your clean jokes. The Molly Made Clean Joke of the Day is read every morning at 7:50 a.m. So not only will you receive recognition for being hilarious, but you'll become eligible to win a $100 gift certificate good for Molly Made House Cleaning, Molly Made Carpet Cleaning, or Mr. Handyman Services. Not too shabby, huh? So go ahead and send us your jokes to cleanjoke@wchl1360.com. That's cleanjoke@wchl1360.com.
Who's Talking with D.G. Martin can be heard once again Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. The Playmaker's new production is Frozen. It's a very provocative play, as Drew Barr, its director, has helped us begin to understand. Mm. We talked about the three characters in the play, a mother whose daughter has been abducted, struggling over a period of 20 years with how to deal with that. The awful, seamy guy who did the job, we get to know him in a way
yes.
that we, some of us would say, I don't want to know anything, and begin to, even not sympathy is not the right word, but begin to sort of understand some of the things that are driving him. And then this kind of added character, the psychiatrist who knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and you've told us about all of these. What have we missed? What have we missed?
Well, one thing that I wanted to add about the seeming normalcy of Ralph and the fact that
the abductor.
What's one of the things that the play brings out and as that coincides with the work that Agneta, the psychiatrist, is doing, is we get to see the little struggles and frustrations that affect Ralph's daily life. And that's, I think, how we start to see that though there is a normalcy, there is a disappear into the crowd element to his personality that makes us understand and recognize how criminals and sick people can be can live amongst us. We also
forgive me for interrupting, mm-hmm. but it brings back one of my good friends, Robert Bashford, teaches psychiatry in the medical school. And he says that one of the hardest things to do in demonstrating for medical students this phenomena that you just described is to is for them to understand that very, very sick people can be very, very normal in so many different ways. And if you take and sometimes it's just hard to prove that a seemingly normal, a person fitting in society because to turn one leaf over and that person is in great need of help and treatment and maybe protecting the public from this person.
Absolutely.
And all of us have some abnormal characteristics that our normalcy carries. But excuse me for interrupting, but keep talking about this particular feature of the play.
Well, and you see how Ralph, how seemingly small events and frustrations can affect him very deeply and strongly, and you see that he's obsessive and meticulous. His use of language is very specific and repetitive, and so you begin to see that his brain, though it allows him to exist somewhat, you know, as anyone else would and does in the world, that there is a different organizing principle going on inside of him, that as he explains, you know, at one point he says, sometimes these things, they hot up. That his violence comes from a superhuman need to control for most of the time in his life. And that then there are these moments where he needs a release. And I feel like that's one of the things that's very compelling, and some of the sympathy that we feel for Ralph during the play comes from watching him, watching the effort that it takes for him to just get through his daily life.
Moving back, for those who might have joined us in the middle of this, we're talking about the Playmakers' new play, Frozen, and there are three basic characters. One, the mother of a child who has been abducted by the second character, Ralph, who is, you know, we just call him an evil, you know, he's a criminal,
right.
And we get to know him. And then
specifically not using the word evil.
We would see him. We would certainly, as the audience would, as we're first introduced to him, see him as evil. And then as we watched the play as you present it to us, we would begin to question that. Is this evil or is it not? Mm. But in any event, he's a bad guy. He doesn't need to be on the streets. And he has done this horrible thing to the daughter of the first character. Then there's a third character, the psychiatrist.
Agneta. Agneta Gottman's daughter.
And what does she now bring to this? How does she see Ralph? I guess that's the maybe. What does she see in Ralph that you and I might not see?
Well, she sees the damage, I think. She sees the effects of years of physical and mental abuse as a child. So she sees, and her studies are specifically about the effects of that abuse on the brain development of children, and then on the brain functions of people, and specifically in the play, she talks about frontal lobe damage and the way that that affects physically how that affects the body, and as well as the way that certain thought processes and certain what she says the way that we learn to stick to the rules of everyday life is impaired, so that somebody like Ralph doesn't know how to be human in the way that we understand
it. So one of the roles that she plays in this play is to help us understand in a different way what's going on with Ralph.
Yes.
And you wouldn't let me, or you said you wouldn't keep me from using the term evil, but you said you wouldn't use it. And as we move in, as the play develops and understanding Ralph in part through Agneta's, the psychiatrist, explanations, we begin to understand why this happened. Now, is it her belief that since all of these things that Ralph didn't have any control over made him what he is, that he's not really responsible for that, for the abduction of this child and the abduction and murder of the other children?
I don't think she would go that far, and I don't think the play doesn't go that far. The play does not absolve him of responsibility, and I think she would just advocate for the fact that he is not in control of himself the way that he should be. You know, he can't help himself, and I guess, you know, even by saying that, there's an implication of, so can we help him? You know, that mm-hmm. he certainly he should not be out on the streets. But specifically, and it's interesting, the character of Agneta is specifically American and the play takes place in England where there is no death penalty. And her work in America, we can assume, is spent largely trying to prevent men from being killed under the death penalty. In England, she isn't forced to make that plea because there is no death penalty.
She's trying to learn rather than trying to advocate. She's not trying to get that person put back on the street.
Right. No, absolutely not. Yeah. And we also see that she's horrified, repulsed by what he has done and what he's capable of. But she's also, she does the thing that so very few other people do, which is she tries to understand. She asks him questions and tries to understand why he does what he does, not just what he does.
Well, let's take a quick break. We're talking about the new Playmakers production of Frozen, and we're talking with its director, Drew Barr. We'll be right back.
The High & Rubish Insurance Agency is an independent insurance agency serving our community for over 40 years. Why should you work with an independent agent? Because an independent agent works for you, not a big insurance company. Now's the time to be sure that you have the right insurance coverage for you and your family. So call High & Rubish for your free insurance review. High & Rubish will assess your insurance needs and make sure you have the coverage you need. Many of the insurance reviews High & Rubish completes result in no insurance change. Isn't that reassuring? Wouldn't you like to be sure you're covered? You have nothing to lose and everything to gain by calling High & Rubish today for your free insurance review. Call 913-1144, 913-1144, or stop by 6015 Farrington Road in Chapel Hill. High & Rubish Insurance, when you need to be sure.
Now that the holiday season is over, it's time to redecorate your home. You can start now. Visit the Giant Silk Sale at University Florist on East Franklin Street and Botanica at University Square. During the month of January, University Florist and Botanica are having a huge silk flower sale. All silk orchids and green plants at 25% off and silk flowers by the stem at 30% off. Visit University Florist today at 124 East Franklin Street or Botanica at University Square.
The Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber of Commerce will host its annual meeting Wednesday, January 25th at the Carolina Club on UNC's campus beginning at 11:30. This year's keynote speaker is James Lee Witt, former director of FEMA, who currently serves as CEO of James Lee Witt Associates. Tickets to the annual meeting are $45 for members, $70 for non-members. Table sponsorships are $500, which includes 10 seats. Visit carolinachamber.org to reserve your seat. Registration deadline is January 18th. It's the Chamber's annual meeting Wednesday, January 25th. 25th at the Carolina Club.
You can hear D.G. Martin with a replay of Who's Talking from the whole week, Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360, WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Talking about Frozen, it's the new Playmakers production. It's a very stimulating, dramatic work, and its director, Drew Barr, is telling us all about these characters. One character, of course, the mother whose child was abducted by the second character, Ralph, the very troubled and bad pedophile and abductor of children, and then a psychiatrist who is analyzing all of this and talked a lot about Agneta and the perspective that she brings to the play. Tell us what you will about what's going on in her, you know, why she is a more complicated and interesting character other than just kind of being the person who brings wisdom to this situation.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot more complex than that, isn't it?
Yes. We over the course of the play, Agneta's story, there's a somewhat complicated timeline to the play. As we mentioned, Nancy Shirley, the mother, and Ralph Wantage, the abductor, serial killer, their stories transpire over the course of 20 years. And Agneta's story actually transpires over the course of 3 to 6 months in the present year, in the year 2001, say. So we see a much more concentrated life portrayed with Agneta. She has a specific task, which is to travel to England for a visiting fellowship at a university there. And as part of that, she's carrying with her clinical work over to England, and she's doing a case study on Ralph, who's in prison. And as part of that, she's also delivering a lecture to an audience at the university where she has a visiting fellowship. And she talks in her lecture about...
And she gets a supposed, theoretically, a joint lecture. Is that right?
She's refers quite a bit to her colleague, a man that she works with that she has worked with very closely over the past 10 years.
So a very important person in her professional and personal life intersecting in this lecture.
Kind of. Yes. And we also see throughout the play that she's clearly trying to maintain a degree of control over a very upsetting experience. You know, that she's having a very difficult time maintaining the composure that she clearly trades in.
This is another thing for me that is that I identify with so much as a part of the play, and that is all of these people who walk around so solid, seemingly so solid and secure and authoritative. And who knows which of them is struggling deep down with some family crisis or some personal challenge, and yet they're able to just maintain a kind of cool professional discipline and keep their focus on their work. And you know, all of this, it's just amazing that this can happen.
This
is kind of what I see in this part of it. I don't know how, as a director, how in the world do you pull out all of these complexities and work with your actors to convey this, or do you just let the words do the job?
Well, it's funny. It's a real juggling act because ultimately you do kind of need to just let the words do their job, and this play is interesting because the words are if you've read the play, it's on the page. It's practically a verse play. And it's extremely, the words are very carefully chosen. It's formally presented. And so there's a sense that the words have their own magic that is to be performed in the theater. And the inner lives of the characters are so deep and troubled and endlessly complicated. But as you said, so much of what we see is how that inner life conflicts with their outer life, and so you're working on three fronts, you know.
Yeah.
And you're always doing that. I mean, that is part of what's always challenging and fun about making theater. But this is particularly different because the characters don't. When they interact, they don't get to release what characters often do.
Well, surely this is a big challenge as a director on this playmaker's play, Frozen. Now, none of us know what a director does. I mean, we never get to see the director. It's just like the actors come out and read their parts. And I mean, what are the challenges that you face in this particular play? What are some of the fun, now looking back, now that you're almost there, what are some of the fun challenges that you've had?
Well, it's a very odd job being a director. And I found my way to directing after having acted for many years. It's all fun and it's all scary and difficult. It's very fun to work with designers, and when you first, usually that's one of the first things that happens is after you read the play, you sit down with a set designer and a costume designer and a lighting designer and a composer or sound designer. These days, you know, there are many, many aspects of design and production. And you talk about how the play makes you feel, what images the play conjures for you, what happens in the play. There are real nuts and bolts conversations in terms of where things have to take place and do you need a chair? Do you need a faucet?
Each of these you mentioned from the director's role, and we probably think of a director as just managing the actors up on the stage, and you've introduced who designs that set, who designs the costumes, who supervises the music selection, all that, and you're saying the director has ultimate responsibility. But when you're talking to the people who kind of work with you, does each of them sit down and study the play with you, or can you just kind of give them directions and hints and tell them what to do?
No, they ideally and usually, I'm fortunate to work with pretty conscientious and talented designers. So it's important for a set designer, for instance, to know the play at least as well as the director. Because the set designer has to conceive of a physical space where the play can take place, and so a set designer needs to know what the key moment or moments are and where they're going to happen and how they're going to happen, or at least be ready to talk and argue with the director about what those things are.
Interrupt again, because one of the things on the Playmaker stage, it's a particular challenge and opportunity because of the way that set is designed. But nevertheless, in a play like this one, where you've got 20 or 30 or 40, bunches of scenes. All in different
30.
Places and airplanes and, in
gardens.
Vans and gardens, all of this. No way in the world, I guess. I guess you could conceivably have a literal scene for each of these, but it would be a challenge. And the other challenge is to have abstract might not be exactly the word, but to have a something which isn't doesn't really show where you are, but lets the audience believe that you're in a place that's not particularly specifically designed.
Exactly. Yeah.
And is that a challenge, or does it just kind of? I choose this word very well. I'm not going to even say the word, but in some respects, you're just kind of punting by using an abstract scene rather than trying to have specific reminders of it.
Uh-huh.
And how does all of that?
Well, you get a feeling from the play, or ideally, I guess I do. I'm kind of a groper, not like
Ralph. Ralph.
Exactly. but this play, for instance, you really because we spend a lot of time in the minds of these people. The play is very much concerned with their inner life or their inner lives. And so the physical space is one that needs to allow us to go into a kind of abstract place, if you will, inside the mind, as well as then deliver us at certain times to a very specific feeling of being in the real world. And that was, it's one of the reasons why I'm excited about the design that we've come up with for the play, because I feel like it is an empty space in many ways, but there's an architecture to it that reminds us that hopefully that we live our lives in space, in interiors. Mm. And then we walk out into exteriors, but we're defined by the walls and the buildings around us, I guess.
We'll have to come see this set play. But we need to take a break. But just first, you are absolutely compelled to follow word by word what the playwright has written.
Absolutely.
You just don't change a word. If you did, you'd think long and hard about it.
Absolutely.
But the playwright gives you virtually no firm, solid directions about the set or the costumes, does she?
Not usually. That's an interesting... These days, it's interesting, especially working on new plays, because they're... they don't usually. Sometimes there are specific things that need to be followed.
If there's a desk or something like that.
But it's funny these days when you're working on new plays. Often I find that productions of new plays start looking very similarly to the original production, which I am shocked and a little appalled by.
Well, I'd like to talk about that. We got to take a break and come back, and then I want to ask you about the controversy that's developed around this play. We're talking about the play Frozen, which is the current Playmakers production. I'm talking to its director, Drew Barr, and he and I'll be right back.
WCHL 1360. Time now for Biography for Radio with Jack Perkins. Brought to you locally by the Cedars and East West Partners Community.
He preferred a pickup truck to a limousine, though he could have bought limos by the dozen. His story next on Biography for Radio.
Oh, man, look at this.
What now?
They're raising my cable rates. If my long-distance rates go up, I just switch my phone service. But cable companies don't have any competition, so I'm stuck paying these rates.
But they do have competition. I called American Satellite and ordered a free 4-room DirecTV system, and I love it. Call and ask how you can get access to over 225 channels, often for less money than what you pay for cable.
Call 888-999-0713. 888-999-0713. Hurry, offer ends February 28, 2006.
He was born in the Oklahoma countryside, where milking cows and driving a truck were part of daily life. Growing up in the Great Depression, he had to work hard to pay his way through college. In the 1940s, he married the daughter of a prosperous banker. When he opened his first store soon after, he was with a loan from his father-in-law. But in the end, it was his own vision that made him rich. A retailing pioneer, he bought in bulk to keep prices low and shared profits with his managers. When computers appeared on the market, he quickly installed them. He was even known to fly around in a small plane, nosing out new store locations, often smack in the middle of several towns. His first giant discount store opened in 1962 in Rogers, Arkansas. He went for low margins and big sales. And he got them. Today, the chain he founded has more than 5,000 stores worldwide. Though the retailing genius died in 1992, his legacy still makes headlines. Critics have attacked the company's low wages and its steamroller effect on small retailers. But no one can question the incredible business prowess of Walmart founder Sam Walton. For Biography, I'm Lawrence Scott.
Biography is a trademark of A&D.
Biography for Radio, brought to you on WCHL by the Cedars of Chapel Hill and East West Partners Community. The Cedars is the country's premier retirement community. Call 929-1995 to find out more on this very special community. Life has been good to you. Now it gets even better at the Cedars of Chapel Hill.
Who's Talking with D.G. Martin can be heard once again Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm talking to Drew Barr. Drew is the director of the Playmakers' current production, Frozen. And if you missed the early part of the program, of course, program comes on at 6 o'clock every weekday evening and then is repeated at 10 o'clock. And then the following Sunday, we re-air all of the weekday programs. And finally, this program will be on the web, available for podcasting on the WCHL website. So if you missed some of Drew's provocative comments about the play, you can catch up in one of those ways. Drew, tell us about the controversy that's involved with the playwright and this play very quickly, if you can, because I think it's very interesting.
Yes. The playwright, Bryony Lavery has recently been the subject of a plagiarism lawsuit against her. There is a doctor, a clinical psychiatrist named Dorothy Lewis, who works out of NYU, I believe, or was originally the chair of medicine, as is the character Agnetha Gottmund's daughter in the play, the chair of psychiatric medicine at NYU, and who does work specifically similar to the work that Agnetha does in the play. And Malcolm Gladwell profiled Dr. Lewis in an essay in The New Yorker, I think in 97.
Malcolm Gladwell, if you didn't catch it, is the best-selling author of two, what is it, Blink and Turning Point.
Blink and Tipping Point, I think.
Tipping Point, yeah. So we meet all of these people. So he had written an article that has a lot of this play in it.
Yes.
Some of this play in it.
Specifically the character of the psychiatrist. I guess Dr. Dorothy Lewis, as well as Malcolm, specifically Dr. Lewis, I guess, had been hearing many of her friends had seen this play when it, I think both when it was in London and then when it came to New York, and people were saying to her, you have to see this play. It's amazing. This character is so like you. Her work, I think you'll find it really interesting, is what they were saying to her. And she ultimately went to see the play, and I believe Malcolm Gladwell had the same experience. He went to see the play, and he discovered that that whole sections of dialogue, if you will, monologue, really, that are spoken by the character of the psychiatrist in the play were lifted verbatim from the essay that he wrote for The New Yorker. And so he took great umbrage initially at his words being lifted, and Dorothy Lewis was very upset at her life being lifted.
Well, in some respects, she says, you have this character is me, and you've misbetrayed me. You know,
ultimately.
Two conflicting claims.
Yeah.
in the sense that this is me, but it's not me.
Right,
you wronged me.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting.
Which is all of which is interesting to me, and then the other feature of it, Jim Hefner, my colleague out here, when I talked to him about this, said, well, you know, the old rule is that if you steal from one person, that's plagiarism. If you steal from five or six, that's research. but there is this controversy about what license you have to use other people's words in different formats when you're expanding them and building on them rather than just kind of copying them.
Yeah. And that was something that Gladwell ultimately kind of embraced and put forth in a second essay that he wrote in The New Yorker about the whole plagiarism suit or the plagiarism charge that came up about the play. And it's an amazing follow-up article. I think it was called Something Borrowed, where he talked about the fact that he considers, if I may, I guess he considers himself an artist. He puts ideas in the form of words out into the world, and there is something about the fact that then people do with them what they will. And he was ultimately felt very strongly that what Bryony Lavery, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, that she made such spectacular use of his words and gave them such transcendent new life.
Well, this is a topic for a whole other program. I wish we had it, but we got to quit because we're out of time. And just time enough for me to thank you, Drew Barr, for taking time to spend with us and talk about this play.
My pleasure.
We get us all excited about all the extra dimensions to it that go far beyond the playwright's words or the stage that's been created or all of these disputes that we've had. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks to all y'all for listening. We'll be back same time tomorrow.
At work, in the car. News Talk 1360, WCHL, Chapel Hill, Carrboroughs, News Talk and Tar Heel Station.